Since it is Labor Day weekend, I figured we'd bring Patrick Dolan on, our employment lawyer, to talk through anything labor-related that you'd like to ask him about. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. The phone line's open right now. Get your questions in. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
Good, John. How you doing?
Good. Patrick Dolan's from Conti and Dolan. Yes, of Karen Conti fame. Patrick handles the employment law. Karen does the family law. Their number's 312-332-7800. Okay, Patrick, happy Labor Day weekend.
Same to you and same to everybody. It's absolutely beautiful outside.
Is it a good opportunity for, regardless of people's opinions on unions or whatever the case may be, recognize that it was a labor movement about 120 years ago that got us to a 40-hour work week and a five-day week with weekends off?
Yeah, that's true, as well as a whole bunch of other benefits. I mean, the movement really started in response to pretty deplorable work conditions. Folks were working 7 days a week. There were little, if any, child labor laws. Benefits weren't readily provided. So folks were working all the time for minimum wages, no benefits, generally speaking, and pretty horrible working conditions. So out of that became a movement really pushed forward by labor unions that were developing in the late 19th century to protect workers and provide for a living wage. And as you mentioned earlier, the 40-hour work week. So a lot of the stuff that we have today is a result of pretty tough movement by labor unions a long time ago to make sure workers are protected.
I did a question of the day on Your Money Matters this week. I forget which day, but I had seen some research that came out from Gallup about the popularity of unions, and it's waxed and waned over the years. But in the 60s, it kind of peaked out near 75% favorability. In 2009, at the start of the Great Recession, it was down up to below 50%. It's back up to maybe near its 1960s highs, right around 70% or so. Patrick, do you have any sense of why over the last few years unions have become more popular? Is it because they've actually been able to make some gains, more people joining them? Do you have any sense of that?
I think it's probably because they're responsible in large part for making the gains that you just mentioned. I mean, you know, but for very strong pushback from workers, a lot of stuff like family medical leave that was, you know, it's now paid in Chicago and Illinois, and a whole bunch of other benefits, and not to mention also the increase in the minimum wage, which is pretty steadily gone up, especially here in Illinois. And a lot of that is the result of, strong labor movement. So I think folks are recognizing the contribution of unions, sometimes more than others, but they're seeing a lot of benefits derived recently from labor unions.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've talked with our professor, Michael LaRoy, who will join us on Monday, too, about how even if you're not in a union, often the union movement extends into politics, right? Like, even if you're not in a union, but Illinois' minimum wage went up, it often went up because of the movement of the labor unions pushing through it, not only in negotiations with their own employer employees, but through their politicians, their state legislatures, etc. And we should also mention that the federal minimum wage has not gone up, $7.25 last time I checked that, Patrick. I love how we're talking about this, and Patrick, I prepared you for none of this. I just threw this all at you at the last second.
Yeah, no, it's good. I enjoy talking about it. And you're right. I think the spillover from lobbying efforts by labor unions on politicians is that, you know, everybody benefits because those are laws that are applicable to everyone. As I said, especially here in Illinois, we have a lot of laws in terms of leave, minimum wages, you know, as you mentioned, et cetera, that are directly the result of unions lobbying politicians. And then we all benefit because of the change in law.
Absolutely. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. You can call in with any questions. There was a lot of questions, Patrick, about non-competes. You and I chatted when news had dropped, was it last week or the week before, about this September 4th original plan to implement a ban on all non-competes. As you had predicted all along, although it got a little close to the end, September 4th, as I haven't checked in the last couple of days, Patrick, but nothing's changed in the fact that that is not going to be the case September 4th.
No, nothing's changed. The law right now is that the FTC ban on non-competes will not go into effect on September 4th because of a nationwide ruling coming out of the district court in Texas. John, what we don't know is what the Supreme Court will do on the issue, perhaps before September 4th, but that seems unlikely, or maybe not, because there's a contradictory ruling by a district court judge in Pennsylvania which upheld the FTC's ban. But the most recent ruling we have from a district court is that the FTC ban will not go into effect on September 4th.
That's important for everyone to remember. Got a lot of texts actually about our union stuff. Someone texted in that they now work for the state of Illinois, and it really kind of opened up their eyes to some of the things that unions have benefited from. They said it changed their perspective on protections in the workplace. 708 chimed in about how I mentioned that at the Great Recession that there was a deep cut in the amount of people that supported unions. They said that in 2008, recession members were cut from the rolls because they couldn't pay dues. And unions didn't find work for them. So maybe the unions weren't as strong to negotiate and unfortunately couldn't get as much for their employees, hence the perhaps change in perception. All interesting stuff, Patrick.
Yeah, and I think people maybe don't recognize the fact that a lot of change in law has come from the lobbying efforts of the unions. Most people still, John, as you know, are not members of a union in this country. And so perhaps they don't recognize the connection between the union's efforts and the laws that they benefit from. I think that's probably the case.
Okay. I have a question from a texter. I hope you know the acronym they're talking about. But they say, hello, John and Patrick. I teach music for children in several centers and schools. I would like to write an MOU for clarity interns, or MOU for clarity, interns of the schedule and other terms we have discussed. Would you recommend this? Do you know what she's referring to there, he or she?
Yeah, so MOU is a memorandum of understanding, which essentially outlines the terms of somebody's job. It can be an enforceable document, like an employment agreement or an offer letter, but it really defines the terms of the job's hours, the pay, the benefits, what the person will be doing, and so there's some clarity as to what the job will entail. I think that's a really good idea.
Is that something you help with? Because I know you obviously represent a lot of employees now, but you also represent employers in certain places. Are those sort of documents that you look over sometimes just to give it the once over to make sure it looks, reads, and sounds okay before they send it off to their employees?
Oh, absolutely. I do a lot of work for companies developing, writing policies and employment agreements and offer letters and MOUs. And I think, you know, clarity and transparency are things that I always strive for so that everyone knows the terms and conditions of their job and what the employer is expected to provide for them and what they're expected to do for the employer. So I would actually focus on turning an MOU into a more detailed offer letter, something like that, which provides typically more detail and more enforceable terms, which benefits both the employer and the employee. But I do that kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's a double-edged sword because I agree. I think everyone should know what kind of the terms are, right, when you take a job and what's expected of you. But when you write that down, Patrick, those things sort of become enforceable, so you better hold to them as the employer, right?
Yeah, but ambiguity, I think, breeds a lot of litigation, John, that really could be avoided if there is clarity in a written document. So that's why I'm all for clarity and putting something in writing.
Absolutely. 312-981-7200. Already started getting some texts. Let's get some phone calls as well. 312-981-7200. More with Patrick Dolan after this on WGN. 123 on WGN. Happy Saturday, everyone. Last day of August. Meteorological fall starts tomorrow, but of course it's the Labor Day weekend, the unofficial end of summer on Monday. But for anyone that just likes summer lingering on a little longer, we officially have it till near the end of the month at the equinox, and I like to say it stretches into the last 80-degree day. We get some of those in October, so I'm happy to hang on to summer for all you, too. Patrick Dolan continuing our conversation, an employment lawyer of Conti and Dolan. Patrick, I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this question. I don't know how much you understand or know about union law, certainly more than me, but feel free to punt on this one, okay?
Sure.
This is a great question. Why do non-union workers, this is from the 630, why do non-union workers at a company who opt out of their dues, why are they allowed that company's union workers' benefits? Is there a possibility of change in the near future? Catch us up, because there was a Supreme Court ruling in the last few years that essentially correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, didn't mandate that people join the unions at the places that they work at. Is that correct, or is it state by state still? I'm a little behind on all that.
No, I think that's correct, John. And I think you just answered the question in the sense that you're not going to be denied benefits because you don't join the union to pay those union dues. So you're going to be entitled to whatever those union members get, I think is generally the answer to that question.
How do unions keep you in the roles then if they know that you don't have to pay the dues to get all the benefits? I could ask my brother, like, leads his firefighter union. I should just ask him that, how they do it. But I imagine that's an interesting world to navigate for unions.
It is. Yeah, it would be interesting to hear what your brother has to say about that, actually. But it's a good question. Frankly, I'm not sure. I mean, if everyone can benefit the same, then what's the point of paying the union dues? But I'm sure it's more complicated than that. I don't do a lot of labor law, but I'm sure it's more complicated than that. And there are benefits to being in a union versus not. So, but I know generally speaking, though, everyone has the same benefits, regardless of whether you pay those dues.
We can roll that into Monday's show that I'm hosting, Patrick. We're going to do a lot of labor law stuff from 2 to 6 p.m.
Monday. John, and I can call in with that answer.
Okay, cool. Great. You're always welcome. You can call in anytime, Patrick. But if you have answers to questions, that's always more welcome than not. 312-981-7200. I wanted to talk. Both presidential candidates have weighed in on no taxes on tips as their platform. I don't think either presidential candidate can get that done. I think that those are clever ways to get voters in certain places to maybe vote for either candidate. It's just being frank. Maybe I'm wrong there, but I don't see much of an appetite from Congress to follow through on that. But that's a John Hanson aside. We'll leave that where it is. But Patrick, it really does bring up a broader conversation about how tipping is everywhere, even for jobs that never had tipping. The point of sale systems make it so easy to tip. And during the pandemic, we were all tipping so much because we were so grateful, especially anyone that could work from home, to all workers that didn't have that. This tipping world, Patrick, has gotten a little crazy. And I imagine, though, that people that rely on tips or that benefit from tips, these are kind of some great years for them, the past couple and into the future, too.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, I think a lot of it has to do with that point of sale activity, because actually I was at a place getting lunch the other day, and it surprised me that they didn't automatically ask me for a tip amount when I paid for my lunch, because I'm getting so used to, you know, those percentages coming up and automatically tipping that I honestly don't think that much about it. Now, sometimes I decline, as I'm sure some people do, but most of the time I don't. Most of the time, yep, I tip. So it was strange. I'm like, well, where's the tip option? You know, if you travel, tips are much less common than they are here.
I mean, for sure.
It's sort of, yeah, Americans like to tip apparently. But, you know, John, as we were talking about a while ago, you know, the minimum wage for tipped employees is now, you know, up to $8.40 in Illinois as of January 1, 2024. And that's, in, you know, the minimum wage in the state is $14 per hour. And what the movement now actually is to reduce that difference, because employers are getting less and less of a credit toward that minimum wage. And so what we're going to have is, you know, our employers being obligated to pay more of that $14 per hour minimum wage amount in Illinois. We're moving toward that. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised, because there's some legislation talking about this, that, you know, the tip credit is going to be eliminated statewide, maybe as early as January. So there's a lot of movement in favor, I think, of employees who work on tips.
Yeah.
Who get tips, I should say.
It's a really interesting discussion to have, because, like you said, I tipped on an oil change once. I didn't even know I was supposed to. I don't think I am supposed to, but there it was, an option, and I felt like I'd be stared at and judged if I didn't add a couple dollars on. And as I thought about it, I'm like, well, the guy who's like standing underneath my car changing my oil probably does deserve a tip. But I've heard from a lot of workers that they now negotiate with their bosses to have those point of sale systems there. Employees like to work at places where those are. And so there's almost this keeping up with the Johnsons amongst employers to have those there. And honestly, it probably benefits employers too, Patrick, because at the end of the day, the workers only care about the total that they make, right? If it's $25 an hour, they don't care if it's $20 from the employer and $5 from tips, or $5 from the employer and $20 for tips. So if we are tipping a bunch, employers in a roundabout way sort of get off the hook a little bit, Patrick.
Yeah, and I wonder if, John, we, in terms of people who consume and pay for things, if we're going to change our attitude toward that when the tip credit goes away and employers actually, assuming it does, and employers actually have to pay the full minimum wage, if we know that, you know, we're not making up for a loss in minimum wage or paying people on top of. I don't know if that's going to matter to anybody, but yeah. I think you're entirely correct. I think it's now something that's ubiquitous, and you're going to see, you know, you're just, employees are going to expect it.
Yeah. Patrick, I tossed a question to you right when I was supposed to go to news, so I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. That's my bad. Why don't we pick up this conversation? Your thoughts to 312-981-7200 after the news here on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. We're powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Our normal time 1 to 3 p.m., but as you just heard, cut a little bit short today for a good reason. Can't wait to hear the cats here on WGN once again. And of course, the sweet, sweet pipes of Dave Emmett. Let's bring in Patrick Dolan. He's our employment lawyer. 312-981-7200 for any questions you may have. Patrick, John Williams, the great John Williams, does a news click every day where he just asks a random question and people chime in with their guesses, or not their guesses, excuse me, their responses. It's not a scientific poll, but he's running one this weekend about how people are satisfied or not satisfied with their job. And the question asks, about the job you have or the last one you have, do you love it? Do you like it? Do you tolerate it? Or do you hate it? And Patrick, I'm kind of curious, what percentage of people do you think say they love or like their job? Any guesses?
I would say around 50%.
It's way more than that. Now, these are the early results.
Oh, wow,
and you can still vote at WGNradio.com. I hope John doesn't mind that I'm teasing this poll. He'll have the full results, of course, on Tuesday, a best of show Monday, but he'll be live Tuesday with these full news click results. But since it's kind of lining up our conversation, I had to give it. 36% of people say they love their job as of right now. 36% of people say they like it. So that's a 72% in the top half. 26% say they tolerate it. Only 2% of WGN listeners who voted in this poll at the news click say they hate it, which I'm surprised about. So all you job haters out there, if you want your voices heard, go to WGNradio.com to the news click. I'm curious how those results will shake out when I listen to John, who will do that after the 10:30 news on Tuesday morning. Does that surprise you, Patrick?
Well, first of all, I'm probably not a good person to ask, given what I do for a living. People don't call up and say, I love my job so much, I just want to tell you. So, you know, I have to sort of extrapolate what I hear every single day into numbers where I'm like, well, this can't be everybody. So that's why I said about half. So I was definitely a little low, given what I hear every day. But no, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, most people don't call me up and say, I hate my job, frankly. Most people call me up and say, I don't think I'm being treated fairly, whether it's in some, you know, term of my job or how much I'm paid or what my bonus is or lack of promotion or lack of, you know, increase in responsibilities, or when they're terminated, they don't think the process has been fair to them. So that's what I hear. I don't hear I hate my job very often. I just hear I'm really concerned that I'm not being treated fairly.
Now, you bring up a great point there, Patrick, which I had never really considered. We've taken, I don't know, how many calls and texts over the couple of years you've been on the show, hundreds of them. And I often wonder, do people just think that they get the sense that nobody likes their gigs? But I think you're right, Patrick, in that if someone truly hated their job and maybe they were felt like they were being discriminated against or something like this, maybe they even had a legal case, they'd probably just leave their job. It's the people that call in and text in with concerns about their job are upset because they actually like it a lot.
Yeah, you know what? Most people call me, John. When I say most, I want to say like 80 or 90%. Most people say, I really like what I do, but because of a boss or a coworker or a policy or something like that, I am not being treated fairly in that that's ruining my job, but I don't hate my job. And so, you know, that's what I hear all the time.
Yeah, I think it's important to point that out because I just want people that are listening that maybe do have an issue with work to feel comfortable calling you, even if it is, and in fact, even more so because they love that job and they want to keep it. They want to make it work some way, in some way that it isn't right now. 312-332-7800 is how you can call Patrick Dolan to reach out about those things. Our phone number right now, 312-981-7200. Getting a lot of texts. The phone lines are still wide open for anything that you've got. Tony on the other end will pick up those calls for you and answer them as he's doing right now. So, Patrick, what are some of the issues that you're seeing that people call in about these days, and maybe a barometer of how the job market is going on the whole?
Well, you know, people still call me about the non-compete, thinking that non-competes are unenforceable, and I have to remind them that they're still as enforceable as they ever were. You know, the same tests apply, so they're not banned, but it's sort of still remarkable to me that people think that they're not enforceable. A lot of people call me with regard to, you know, complaints that they want to make about what's going on in their workplace. How do they go about that? Who should they complain to? Should it be the boss, HR? Should they talk to coworkers about it? And so the process of what to do when they have a concern about, you know, being mistreated is something that employees are often confused by, even when, you know, the policies and procedures are outlined, say, in a handbook or, you know, in an HR training session by the company. They still want to know, you know, practically speaking, what should I do? What's the best way to handle it? Because, again, as we just mentioned, folks typically want to keep their job and they don't want to lose their job. And frankly, they're pretty disappointed when they, you know, learn after talking through a whole bunch of different options and issues that staying there is probably not going to work out for them if they're concerned about discrimination, harassment, something, or retaliation, something like that. So I talk to people all the time to work through that whole process. What should I do? Should I complain? Should I stay? Should I go? I would say, John, those are the most common questions. And I would say, finally, people come to me, obviously, all the time with separation agreements, thinking that they should be paid more on the way out. And, of course, you know, they're concerned about getting their next job and how much time that'll take. So all of those things are things that I hear about every day.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, I agree that people can call you, and it doesn't mean that they're immediately, you're going to be calling their boss demanding X, Y, or Z. You're going to walk them through the process, knowing that it could eventually get to that point, but people should call you earlier rather than later.
Yeah, because we want to figure out what's the most effective way to deal with it. And oftentimes, at least at the beginning, it's not particularly effective for me to get overtly involved and send a demand letter or, you know, talk to the company's legal counsel. Or that may happen down the road, but oftentimes that's not the way to go at the beginning. There's a lot of issues to work through because, what is the goal? Do you want to stay there? Do you want to leave? Do you want a different job? And we focus on how to get there with, frankly, minimal disruption and cost. Because it's obviously very stressful. People call me and they're very stressed out. And so I try to provide them with options that will reduce their stress as they work through these issues.
I don't know if she's super stressed out, but let's get Irene on the line. She's a little upset about some things happening in the workplace. Hey, Irene, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm in my mid-70s, okay? I just want to get to work. And it seems that the employees, and I don't know if they're just, if it's a mean thing or what it is, I don't think it is, but they keep on asking me, like, when's your birthday? How old are you? And even the manager...
Oh, we just lost Irene. But Patrick, I think we got what she was getting at. Employees and even her boss kind of saying, how long are you going to work for? You're still working at your age. Does that in and of itself qualify as age discrimination, Patrick?
No, not in and of itself, but it's certainly indicative of possible age discrimination, especially if our boss is asking her the question. And if Irene can still do her job, then those questions are completely irrelevant and shouldn't even be asked of her. But it happens all the time. I mean, people like Irene call me all the time and say people are making comments about me and because of my age or my appearance, you know, that I look so old or how my, you know, geez, I hope I don't have to work at your age. And frankly, comments that are pretty mean. But that doesn't necessarily support an age claim. but it certainly could, especially if your boss is asking you these questions. So that starts down the age discrimination road.
But Irene could call you, and you could maybe formulate an email or a message or a plan of action for her to at least let the bosses know that Irene is aware of it, she doesn't like it, and to please stop.
Yeah, and that's exactly what she should do. And I'm happy to talk to Irene and formulate that communication, which should go to HR and her boss. But it's normally a good idea to include someone in addition to your boss when you make those sorts of complaints. And it should be in an email, and it should include someone like HR to help you work through that.
Irene, I know you're still listening. 312-332-7800 to reach out to Patrick. Our number, 312-981-7200. Got a few minutes left, so get those calls in right now. Let's take a break. More Let's Get Legal after this on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Till then, with Patrick Dolan, Conti and Dolan Law. Patrick's an employment lawyer. Patrick, a great text from the text line, obviously, 773, wanted to know, can you explain and determine the relationship between HR and employee? Walk us through it, because I know they work for me, but they also and really report to the employer. You kind of get what they're getting at here, right, Patrick?
Yeah, I do. So HR works for the employer. I mean, let's be clear about that. They're hired to deal with employee relations issues, policy issues, any sort of investigation issues. Maybe HR has compensation responsibilities, et cetera, but they're an employee who works for the employer. Now, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, a third party who acts between companies and employees to protect employees' rights to some extent, and certainly to educate employees about, you know, their rights and duties and responsibilities within the workforce. But, you know, the HR employees work for the company. And, folks should be aware of that. But they play a very, very important role, because they're the ones oftentimes who can insert themselves between you and your boss or you and your coworker to ensure that your concerns are addressed and to ensure that you're not retaliated against for bringing those concerns to the company representative, whether it be the boss or the HR rep. So their job is really, really important, but they do work for the company.
They do, right? I mean, yeah, you can use them. It's not like you need to, just because they work for the employer, cut them out of the equation. They're an important part of mediation and doing that. But I just think everyone should just remember who they work for.
Yeah, and you should use them. I mean, they're exactly who you should, you know, complain to, et cetera. And oftentimes those complaints are kept confidential for a number of reasons, not the least of which is retaliation. So they play a critical role.
630 wants to know, I got written up. Should I be able to retort my write-up?
Yeah, you should. First of all, you are able to, legally speaking, and you should provide a written response, whether it be a document attached to an email or just an email itself, in response to the write-up. It's always a good idea, especially if you think that it's wrong in any sense at all, you know, factually inaccurate, misleading, you know, you need more context to understand what really happened, always respond, always put the response in writing.
Let's go to the phone lines. Eric has a question asking on behalf of someone he knows. Hey, Eric, what do you got?
Yeah, well, this was something that seemed to affect my son-in-law. He was employed by a company, and they had some expansion problems and whatever, and he was let go. He hadn't been with them a long time. He did sign on with a non-compete and a severance thing, and when he was let go, he did get a severance. He went out and got another job, and was, just before he started, was shut down because they said he couldn't take that job because it was similar to the job he had with the other company.
Yeah, that sounds what you hear, Patrick.
Well,
go ahead, Eric.
The only thing I'll say is that he wasn't like a salesperson wire. He's working in the computer department.
Huh. So it was not maybe related to the job that he ultimately got?
Well, he got another computer job, but I mean, the point is there was no from what we could tell, there's no real competition other than, yeah, I got to keep the computers running. And
yeah.
I have to design or work on the computer programs that do the things for the function of the company. That's
for sure.
The only thing.
I want to get Patrick on here. We got about a minute left. So, Patrick, can you just kind of talk about the scope of what non-competes are able or not able to do? They're not only sales related; they can be related to specific work at the company, right, Patrick?
Yeah, and so I would love to talk to this person because I have many, many questions, and I talk about non-competes with folks, I would say, every single day. So you're not supposed to be prohibited from working, even if it is for a competitor, in a job that's unrelated to the job you had before. And the company has to have a legitimate business interest to even prevent you from doing so, assuming the non-compete is written in a way that's enforceable, meaning if it's not something they can or should be able to protect, like this person is doing a different job for different clients and it does not affect their business, then the short answer is they should not be able to enforce a non-compete legally. Of course, there are practical considerations as to why they do that, right? Because they don't want the person working there to uphold their non-compete. But boy, there are so many issues to walk through, and I'd be happy to talk with that person more.
For sure. 312-332-7800. Eric, give that number to your son-in-law to call Patrick Dolan. And all of you listening, 312-332-7800. Patrick, we're out of time. As always, it's good to talk to you, my friend.
Thanks, John. Happy Liberty Weekend to you and to everybody else listening.
And WGN, for sure. Thanks, Patrick.